That is all he wants. So people are selfish to such an extent that they want, oh, he is my great friend. He has lakhs of rupees. He gives me them. But he does not give to any good cause. He gives you as loans. Is he a great man? One of my friends told me that my friend is so noble-minded that he gives me hundreds and thousands of rupees without any interest and without any... Yes, that's all right. What is that? But does he give a single fire to a good cause? He doesn't. He gives you because there is personal friendship. That's all. He is bound to you. But if he has, say, lots of money, why does he not give a single fire to a good cause? Either you have not spoken to him, he does not know, he doesn't care. How many persons are there, even the political leaders, as they say, who know what they are? In the census you will have scheduled caste, this, etc. How many scholars are there? Have you made a separate catalog? No, none. Because they don't require, they can purchase the scholars. You see, our administrators, they can purchase scholarship. But they don't want to know who is who. They do not want. They will have a particular man, a respect for Vice Chancellor. He will just coax him and then he will put in the vice. But they will never know who is a scholar and who is not a scholar, who is a belly filler in the name of scholarship. They will never know this unless they are themselves scholars. In the UGC, for example, they have got ample money, they have distributed the money to several universities. But is there any scholar in the university, in the UGC department? I very much doubt. There may be certain class, there may be CUG, there may be certain, but none to know who is who. It is advanced centers of philosophy. What does it mean? It means nothing. It is nothing but an extension of ordinary philosophy. Madras has been advanced philosophy. Pune has been advanced. Shimla, the greatest, and they have now Dr. Shimla. Because they found that nothing was done in Shimla, therefore they have closed in Shimla. Now they have come after such a great thing, this thing. What I say is, ultimately, is that you must know in the first place whom you should make guru. Instead of guru finding you, you must find out your guru. In the first place. You must know where is that realized man. And if you cannot know, you must at least come to a man who knows that man. If you are poor, he will show the man. Here is a wealthy man, you go to him. If you come to me, I shall point out the man who is wealthy. I shall say, go to Mahavir Prasad Vyas, he is a man of lakhs. I shall say to go to Shah Babu. I shall say to go to Peshwani. I can't give you anything because I have not heard a single part during the last several years. This is what I shall say. But if you are yourself a man and if he comes to you, then he will say, he will not give a part because you do not know what is wrong cause and what is right cause, what is a good cause and what is a bad cause. You have no discrimination. And that for that we have no made any exertion about it. So, what I say, the first step in spiritual life is to find out a guru, to find out a realized man, to sit at his feet and then serve him, not that with the pranipate na pariprasne na sevaya. No, the seva undi is important. You see, not pranipat, because you can be a scoundrel and yet fall at the feet of the man. This is not necessary. Pranipat karna ho, to man mein karo. It's not necessary that you should touch the feet of the man, because that can be out of pretense. Pariprasnanam, a foolish and stupid man may ask many questions and not learn anything of it. So pariprasna also is not necessary, but seva is necessary. In the olden times, just see what was happening. A shishya was going to God. And he asked, well, do this, that's it. Go into the forest, cut the trees, bring the fuel, and he would do anything. In short, you see, for 12 years he would do seva, and the guru would give nothing to him. And at the end, while going, he would teach the spiritual knowledge. That was the ancient method, but we consider that as foolish. We consider that, you ask, seminars, we must hold seminars, What will they get? Neither the teacher nor the student knows anything about it. And he speaks and they don't understand, they speak, he doesn't understand. And then you pass some time. Have you brought the books today? Don't come then. Then I shall accept from tomorrow. But what is it? You have not studied yourself. That means you are not supposing your students survive and they have not brought your textbooks. And you say in the class, have you brought your textbooks? No, sir, I wouldn't get. You bring the books tomorrow. And when you bring the books, I shall teach you. Is that the way? Why should you not teach them? Why should you not study yourself? And see, and teach them. Well, what is it? I said, you have not brought books? Doesn't matter. You need not have any book. I said, and then you consult your books. Go in the library and this is not the way of teaching. The way of teaching is that if you have not books, I shall not take the class. Meaning he wants a holiday for himself. He has not prepared and he wants his to put the blame upon the students. That's not. This is what I have seen, I tell you. This is not the way of learning spiritual life. Spiritual life consists, well, you let him be a sinner. Let him be a drunkard. Let him be a scoundrel first. You are. If he has surrendered to you, well, he is your friend. They are not ready-made friends and ready-made enemies. There is no such thing for a saint. The saint is unconcerned. There is no friend who is a friend of him from the beginning. Shatru Mitru Udasi, he is absolutely indifferent to this man or that man. To this man or that man. Whoever surrenders to him, whoever wants Brahma Vidya, he gives it. We have in the Upanishad story, the Virochana Indra given to Brahmadev. Virochana was the leader of the demons, Asura, and Indra was the leader of the gods. Both made a contract, both went. And Brahmadev knew that this Virochana must be left out. And therefore, Virochana was satisfied with a seemingly good reply. And he went out. And I have learned Brahma Vidya, he said. What did he learn? He looked into the mirror, that's all. He for that also, Brahmadev asked him to make a penance for 30 years. And for Indra, who was not satisfied with this, he left and he made penance by installments for 105 years. And then Brahma Vidya was given to him. Now, the Brahma Vidya is so cheap, you see, as if it is some leaves of the tree. You pluck it and give it. It is not so. So, we can say when we go from all these systems of philosophy and from all these philosophers to a saint, it is altogether a different matter. No lamppost will be there now. There will be only the lighthouses. They will give it, oh, this is danger, don't come. Don't come here. The real guru would tell you that Ayamsa, Satyama, Krodha, Stavashchandra, Prisham, Abhuta, not a long list of virtues. Where is this time? Art is short, life is short and art is long. When we practice these virtues, Ayamsa, Satyama, Krodha, Stavashchandra, Prisham, Daya, Bhuteshu, Margam, Hira, Chapa. How many all these long lists of things? One not one life, hundreds of lives will be necessary. Even the first two, Ahimsa and Satya, they are impossible. They are incompatible. Jivak has given a very fine example in the Gita Rahasya that a person is going to kill a cow or to kill somebody. And he asks somebody, where is that man going? Where is that cow going? And then if you speak the truth, the cow will be killed. And if you say, in order to save that cow, if you speak, I do not know, then you are asatya. So there is perfect incompatibility between ahimsa and satya. But we are taught ahimsa and satya is the greatest virtue in modern times also. How can they be? Ahimsa is not ahimsa. Ahimsa is nothing but a camouflage for ahimsa. And satya also is a camouflage for asatya. That has been the effect of our being taught that ahimsa and satya are the greatest virtue. No, not in the least. Professor Sarada has said, God realization is the greatest of the virtue. Did he not know? Did not Professor Sarada know that there is a long list of virtues mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita? Why has he made God realization, which is not there at all, as a virtue? Because all the virtues will flow from this single virtue of God realization. Just as the Upanishad says, know what is clay, and you will know in a sense what are the jars. Know what is gold, and then in a sense, you have understood all the ornaments in the world, all the ornaments made of gold. Similarly, have contact with that central virtue, namely God realization. If you have that, then you will have real ahimsa, real satya, everywhere. When Dushyanta went to Kanva ashram near, he found that the tiger and the cow were drinking water at the same. The tiger and the cow, what was the effect of this? Tiger and the cow, remember. Is it possible? Krishna said, there must be the ashrama of a great man, a great saint. Krishna has thought in mind that there must be the ashrama of a great saint, because I am Saya Pratishtham Tat Sannidho Vairatyagaha. This is the Patanjali Sutra. Ahimsa Pratishthayam, if he really, the Ahimsa he has made established, has made home in your heart, then what will happen? Tat Sannidhav, in your neighborhood, you will find that the tiger and the water, then the tiger and the cow will drink water at the same stream. Is it possible? Have you seen anything like this? It is not. Therefore, Prabhupada Sarada has said that it is the central virtue of God realization that must be happened. And afterwards, all these long lists of things will follow. Follow as corollaries, follow a theorem. It is not that equiangularity will be a necessary conclusion from the lateral side of a triangle. If the triangle is three-sided and equilateral, then it must be also equiangular. But none. The definition is that it must be equilateral triangle, the sides are equal. If the sides are equal, the angles must be equal. The angles, this is not the definition of an equilateral triangle that it has three angles. But the three angles must be equal to each other because the sides are equal to each other. Similarly, if God realization is there, every virtue must be coming up to God. Don't try about this and that and that and that. All the arguments will be there if you have gold in your hand. All the jars in the world would have if you have clay in your hand. If you know clay, you know everything else made of clay. If you have our gold, you have everything. If you have ocean, you have the waves. Shankaracharya says, you are this ocean and I am but a wave upon it. But you understand this, but what happens in this world is that Nobel Prizes are given for a wave and not for the ocean. Bharat Ratna was given to Radha Krishna, but not to Radha. Bharat Ratna was a title given to Radha Krishna, who is in no comparison, he stands in no comparison with Radha. And yet, Bharat Ratna was given to him, and Radha was in this world. But who knows? A rare man in the world will know the value. There was a gardener who kept the bakula tree in a corner. In a corner, bakula. If you have not seen that flower, it's very tiny, like just a small button. And it has many petals. One tree is there at Mandau. I don't think anybody, I have not seen anywhere else, but I have seen that flower and tree in Mandau. So he said, Kriti Malakari, Bakula Mapikutra, Pinizade, Yidanko Jani, Yayamia Konan, Dragato, Yavajalan, Dene, Asai. Who knows that Gardner didn't know at all that this bakula farmer will spread by its fragrance the whole of the garden. And he kept that bakula farmer in the corner. Fool he was! Fool! He didn't know the value of that bakula flower, that by its own fragrance it will spread and fill the whole garden. A man who spread the knowledge of God realization throughout India and outside India, he is ignored. And a man who doesn't know anything of spiritual life, but talks of spiritual life, and then he is othered. This is the way in which we are in behavior. So what I am again and again considering is, find out such a man who knows, has realized God, and surrender unto him. That is the first lesson. Where should we begin in spiritual life? We should begin in spiritual life in this manner, that find out the spiritual soul. Find out one who has. If you cannot find him out, then find out at least a person who knows that life. And then ask him, what should we do? And then he will tell you the way in which you should go. Otherwise, with all your prosperity, with all your bank accounts, with all your lakhs of rupees, they will be all, after you die, they will be on the cremation ground. You will put sandalwood, you will camphor on your fire, burning fire, but it will be of no use. So what you want to do is to find out while there is life in you, such thing can be a great soul. And then surrender to him. He will teach you what you want. That is the idea of the spiritual life. It is not the pursuing the virtues. If there are virtues, there are only two negative virtues in the spiritual life. Not positive virtues, but only two negative virtues are sufficient. And they are do not have a covetous eye, the two can be sublime, covetous eye on the wealth of others and on the women of others. These are the only two virtues which are necessary for the spiritual life, not anything else. Akros and Shanti and all these things, they are not your enemies. You see, you need not have Shatshatru. There are the six kinds of Shatru. Kam, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Dhamma, Madhya. And why do you use language? This will follow immediately, necessarily. If you have contact with God, then you will be saved. And you will be saved from all these pitfalls. But if you follow them, God will remain untrue. If you follow any desire for the fulfillment, if you have that, God will give that to you and keep you away. You see, if you want freedom from anger, yes, you will have that, but God will be away from you. But if you have God, then that virtue will also be. Kama, krodha, lobha, moha, madha, matsa, matsa, all these, they are not your enemies. You can, you see, dacoits, for example, they don't know therefore they have dacoity. But don't kill them. Use their power. Use their power for the benefit of a nation. Killing a dacoit is very easy, but making use of their power, which is inherent in them, is most difficult. One who has done that he has understood. One who has killed them, he has not understood. Similarly, one who kills kama, krodha, lobha, he is not a great man. But one who knows God, then he will kill them automatically, not killing them, but retain them and make use of their power. Kama, krodha. Krodha is bad. Why? You must have anger about a bad thing. You must have disgust. You must hate someone who are bad enough. And will a rotten fruit be eaten by you? Just as you throw it away, and good fruit you eat. Similarly, you will employ these servants of yours, kama, krodha, lobha. They are your friends in spiritual life. Don't throw them away. They are your allies. They are, you see. And then kama, krodha, bas. What tatakim, tatakim. It is not. Shankaracharya says, tatakim, tatakim. Kamini, drishti se nahi dekhta. And why? Let the kamini be there. You see, what of that? You don't be attached to her. That's all. Tatakim, tatakim, tatakim. Shankaracharya says, what of that? What of this? You are not touched another man's wealth. What of that? You are not lustful, any woman in the world. What of that? He says, you see. Similarly, Kabir has said, to bhi kacha, ve kacha, nahi guru ka bacha. I think he has said that in that verse also. He has said, kamini ne rishte, brahma, huh? Nadana namalave. Are o bhi kacha, ve kacha, nahi guru ka bacha. He has not as yet found out the guru. Kabir has also said it. Because Kabir has about the same experience as Shankaracharya has. It's not that in the old days we were Vyas and Prahlad. Why Prahlad? Why do you talk that much? Kabir Behadka, Behadka Maidanamta, and not we. Why? We shall also support in the Maidan of Behad. Hadda Hadda ke Guru hote hain, Behad ka Guru bas Kabir hai, hum nahi hai. Why do we not? We shall also support. We shall also fought in the Maidan, in the infinite field of God. Cannot a gnat fly? Cannot a mosquito fly in the air? Will that eagle be necessary? Let eagle be with Vishnu, whatever we care. But a small bird also can fly. The same thing is there. God has not denied to the smallest creature in the world. He has not denied his grace. But to the most arrogant, he has denied his grace. To the most arrogant, to the prophet of man, he has denied his grace. And to a humble man, he has given. Jesus has said the same thing. That what should be the kingdom of God? Then he brought again. Be innocent as not ignorant as a child. Jesus said, be as innocent as this child. Then you have the kingdom of God within you. But we have been all rascals. We have been outside we have cows, inside we are tigers. Inside we are tigers, we have demon in us, but outside we pretend to be virtuous men and saints. This is not. You be from the beginning. This has not been told. This has not been taught. And our Vedanta also has been false and just adumbrating the false things. Vedanta, I may tell you one more thing about Vedanta and how we, this is very necessary apart from Vedanta. In the Vedanta we are taught the theory of Panchakoshas. Annamaya, Pranamaya, Manomaya, Vijnanamaya and Anandamaya. We teach it in the classroom. But have we taught the real thing? We are not taught. We are not taught and nobody knows it. What is that? Are we to teach this, that inside the food, sheet meaning this, just as box within box, have that. Box within, there are five boxes. The outside box is made of food. The sharira, for example, is made of food. Annamaya. Annam Brahma. Then should we be eating always? Annam Brahma. No. Annamaya Pranamaya. You see, we do not live by bread alone. We live by what? In the hospitals, when a man is dying, give Annam Brahma, give him food. Is it possible? Can he eat a single piece, the smallest piece of bread? Can he drink a sip of water? He cannot. In that way, what is it? He is only breathing. He is only breathing. Give him oxygen or give him halwa. Do you give him halwa or mithai? You give him oxygen. Annamayam. Annam Brahma ho. But pranam Brahma also. So, inside that food, there is the necessity of prana. What has it to do with prana? If it does not have no use, then annamaya, pranamaya, manomaya, manaeva manushyanam karanam manna mokshayo. If he doesn't wish to be released, if he thinks of some material thing, yesterday only I told that there was a woman, old woman, she was dying, and she was said, so people thought, what a devoted lady, she is remembering Keshav. So somebody thought that way. But as a matter of fact, she was remembering a Kesuni. Kesuni meaning a Marathi man. Kesuni means a broom. A cow was eating a broom. And she said, that Kesuni is being eaten by a cow. That woman who was on the dying bed and who was to die, almost dead, she uttered the word K. And people thought that she, what a great lady. She is remembering Keshav. She was not remembering, she was remembering that broom in the corner which was being eaten by. Similarly, there is a story told by Tukara. An old woman was there and she was harassing her daughter-in-law. That was the ancient mode, you see. That daughter-in-law, that the mother-in-law, who was generally a widow, could not see, was unable to see the prosperity of the own son and wife. So she said, I am now going to Pandharpur. I am now going, daughter-in-law, mind it well, that don't eat too much of ghee or curds or milk. You see, keep it, I have kept it here. Let it be till I return. I shall return within a week. I am going to Pandharpur and coming back very soon. But in the meanwhile, don't waste, don't be economical. And if some guest comes or some mendicant yachak comes, tell him that my sasu has gone to Pandharpur. Let her come back and then come afterwards. Don't give anything in charity. And she gave all sorts of instructions to Dr. Linda. And the Dr. Linda was so much annoyed by that. He said, Sasi, aap jaiye Pandharpur, main bhai. Don't be anxious about this. You see, I shall manage everything as you wish. And then the Sasu went out and came to the wish. So she gets up, she came. And then she said, why did my daughter-in-law give his reply to me? See, you don't worry about anything, you go to Pandharpur, be at ease. I shall manage everything. She must have some evil motive in her mind. Kashala javedu itadante Pandharpur. She said, why should I go to a long distance? I have got my Pandharpur here. And she came back. Veshi kar gayi. Ava, aap ghar mein aa gayi wapas. Whose fault it was? It is like this, that we do not want God at all. We want the power of God, which will be useful in our samsara. Nothing more than that. We have all desires in our mind. In order to fulfill our desires, we want God. Of course, Sakam Bhakti is not bad. It at least keeps you in touch with God. But let that sakam be transformed into nishkam. Let that sakam be cut out every time and let it go towards God. Then you will understand the importance of the spiritual life till not. So, annamaya, pranamaya, manomaya and vijnanamaya. This vijnanamaya means intellect. It's not man. I have pleasure of the intellect. I told you that Bertrand Russell has this. In his first book, namely The Problems of Philosophy, he has written, what is the use of philosophy? And then he said, it is nothing but the intellectual pleasure. If the intellectual pleasure is that, then at every street corner there is gambling going on. That does not give it intellectual pleasure. I have amassed so many, I have lost so many, and do they not play cards and bridge and all that? They also, this also gives you intellectual pleasure. And beyond that, in the innermost of it, Anandamaya. Anandamaya. And that also has been discarded by Shankar. Anandamaya, meaning mostly of Ananda. No, Maya means Mayat. They say Mayat. This Pratyaya is showing the abundance of it. Abundance of joy and somewhat a little fraction of pain. Shankaracharya discarded. It is not Anandamaya, but Anandam. We'll come to that. Beyond this, of course, there are five sheets. Panchakoshas, you got. Annam, prana, mana, vijnana, five. But Shankaracharya, according to Shankaracharya, it is not Anandamaya also. Anandamaya adhikaranam, there is that Ananda. It is not Anandamaya, but it is Ananda. The Maya should be dropped. Meaning there is painless joy. All joy. All joy. Excruciating pain and joy at the gallows, as Mansur said. Mansur said there is excruciating pain on the Shuri, but at the same time there is the vision of God. There is the vision, that is it. Meaning the vision of God is more important than the pain. It is a painless joy. It is absolutely joy. It is the bliss incarnate. That is Brahman. What does this mean? The theory of Panchakosha is for us. Write notes on or give a full account of Panchakosha. You will give all the accounts which are given. That is not enough. We have a moral there. That catch hold of that Ananda. Catch hold, and then what will you find? You will find as you come back from Anandamaya, Ananda to Anandamaya, from Anandamaya to, you can say, Vijnana, from Vijnana to Mana, from Mana to Prana, and from Prana to food, you will find everything mixed as Ananda. And everything but the result of Ananda, a resultant of Ananda. But if you go inside, then you will find you have to eliminate this, the upper husk. The upper husk you have to eliminate. Are we doing that? Supposing we do it. For example, I sit for meditation and I say, I am not this body, I am not this breath, I am not this mind. Will they not come in succession against you? You try it and I find that they will come with greater revenge upon you, with greater force upon you. So, when you say that I am not the body, the next moment the body will come, the consciousness of body will come with all greater force, as if with revenge will come. I am the body. Then what will you do? You will endless task, endless exercise will you do that? If you want to have it, if you want to really eliminate it, you concentrate your attention upon the Brahman only, upon that Ananda only. And that Ananda cannot be got without the help of some other person in the Now, of course, I shall have to say something more about this spiritual life, and I shall say it tomorrow, and if necessary, for some 10 or 15 minutes, day after tomorrow. So that some time should be given for the questions and answers. And of course, as he has, Dr. Mohanlal has said it, I shall not answer any question which is not motivated, you see, either by way of, either that which is desire of learning from me or teaching me. I shall be equally unconcerned with it. But if there is a stupid question with an ill motive, then I shall not answer it. With such, you should give all your questions to him, and I shall only answer those questions which are genuine and which will be benefited for all and for me also. Otherwise, no question will be entertained. It is not a fashion with me. At the end of the lecture, one should ask him questions, as if to interrogate him. If you say to me that Dhabde doesn't know anything of philosophy, I shall not be sorry for that. If you give me a compliment that he is a great orator and this and that, then I shall not be pleased. You ask such questions which will just add to our knowledge. If any question which is not this motive, I shall not. But there is one temptation, you shall be eager for having these lectures finished, and I shall be eager for the cup of tea, which Mohanlal has promised me on the last day.
Professor Date and members of this learned audience, I have expressed my deep gratitude to Professor Date for delivering a very illuminating lecture today. It was in a series which is taking us higher and higher. And as I told you previously, those who are mentally repelled with what is being delivered by Professor Date must be realizing that they are also being taken by him to a nobler and nobler plane. With this, I again thank you all for cooperating with the Department of Philosophy and for taking the trouble to come here to listen to the lectures. And with that, I again announce that we meet for next lecture in the series tomorrow at 8:15 a.m.
Professor Date, ladies and gentlemen, it is with great pleasure that I again welcome you for the, I believe, 9th lecture in the series of lectures being delivered by Professor Date. Now, I will request Professor Date to begin his lecture.
Maharaj, colleagues and students of the Department of Philosophy, ladies and gentlemen. I am aware that you have been tired by my lectures for the last 1 week. I shall lecture today and tomorrow for about 15 or 20 minutes. I shall try to pack up my materials so far as spiritual life is concerned in this lecture as far as possible, if not tomorrow for about 15 or 20 minutes, so that I shall be free to have my cup of tea afterwards, which your professor has promised, you see, on the first and the last day. Today I shall speak. You have been knowing this, what is meant by God and spiritual life. I have uttered these words several times, and you may be perhaps requiring to know as to what do I mean after all by the spiritual life, or by the divine life, or by God. So I shall tell you in as brief an outline as possible what is the nature of this of spiritual life. And then, secondly, under the heading, what are the dogmas of spiritual life and, if possible, their solution. So under these two headings, I shall speak today and, if necessary, tomorrow. So the first point which I shall take is, what is the nature of spiritual experience? For your benefit, I may tell you that if you read, if possible, a chapter from my book, Yoga of the Saints, Nature of Spiritual Experience, I think you shall know what is spiritual experience. Intellectually, you have nothing to do so far as practical achievement of that is concerned, I know. Even then, as students of philosophy, you must know intellectually what is what. And so I request you just to read that. Yesterday, some two students came to me and said that they want to have a lecture on the lecture on the Bhagavad Gita. Professor M.P. Vyas had requested me already. I said to him, this is no personal reference, please. because it is a good point, and therefore I make his reference, that he has already told me that I should lecture upon the Bhagavad Gita. I said, I am not so cheap. You shall have to give me 200 rupees for every lecture, and I shall give 18 lectures if you like, on every chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. But for every lecture there will be 200 rupees necessary and in advance. I told him this. And I do not understand why the two students should come to me and request. Of course, I didn't say this so much to them. I just sent them back and just see you, professor. And I have told him that I shall do so. That is all. But I may tell them that it is an impossibility. You see. As a matter of fact, he has got certain copies of my two lectures from Pune University. I gave two lectures in the Pune University and the Bhagavad Gita, but I worked for the two lectures for 4 months, you see. So you may not have any value for that, but I have got the utmost value for these two lectures. And if anybody wants to have a lecture from me, let him read these two lectures, which I have given, which I have printed in the Yoga of the Saints, second edition, at the last. Or, I do not know whether Professor M.P. Vyas has got these copies with him. If he has, he should circulate them among his students, so that they will save their money as well as my lectures also. You see, sevenfold stream of the saintly life. This is the heading of that. These are the two lectures on the Bhagavad Gita delivered by me in the University of Pune. Well, now I begin with my lectures as far as nature of spiritual experience is concerned. Here, at the start, we should remember that the epistemological and the metaphysical points of view are identical. That the Brahmavid Brahmaiva Bhavati, the knower of Brahman becomes the Brahman. So there is no difference between the knowledge and the being, between the understanding of an idea and the being, between the transition from idea to reality. It is idealism. Or we may call it better still as spiritual knowledge, you see. It is not simply an idealism as we have in Anselm or other philosophers in the West. Here it is an idea which becomes transformed into reality. The idea of the man, the idea in the head of the man, which has been imported from outside, becomes the reality. Brahmavit, the knower of Brahman, becomes the Brahman. As a matter of fact, here it is a proposition with a predicate in the subject term. To become Brahman is to know the Brahman. It is not to know the Brahman, that is, intellectual knowledge of that becomes the Brahman. It is impossible. Yo buddhaye parato susa, to know the Brahman is to become the Brahman. That is not so. It is the opposite way. The predicate term here is the subject term, and the subject term is the predicate term. To become God is to know God. It is not possible to know God first and to become God afterwards. No. That is why I told you the difference between Hegelian philosophy and Indian philosophy of our sages is quite different. We are non-being first, we become afterwards, the process is there, and afterwards we being. So that the being comes last. Not that the being comes first, as in Hegel, thesis, antithesis, and the synthesis. It is not so. The thesis, that is being, non-being, and the becoming. It's just the opposite of it. That is, the non-being is first, the becoming is the second, and the being is the third. You are ignorant first, you undergo a process, the ethico-spiritual process afterwards, becoming, and then you become God. You see, that is a process. But a matter of fact, to become God is to be God. The process itself ends as you travel. So you reach the destination. If you do not travel at all, how can you go? If you stand at the foot of the mountain and look at the sky, how can you get up the mountain if you never try? That you must have known already as school children. You know that we are all standing at the foot of the mountain and looking at the sky simply. What can we get? We must try. And that is the fundamental difference between the Western philosophy and the Eastern philosophy. All Western philosophy ends in nothing but an intellectual pleasure. It is not that. Yo buddhe paratastu saha. We have to catch hold of that musician, not the music. You see, which can be played upon, you see, on the musical instruments, or you can be just come out of throat. That is not the catching of the musician. The musician is different altogether. He is beside, transcendent, you see, transcending the music, and we must catch hold of him. You see, Janeshwar says, he was sitting in the compartment, Koda Bodhile Angani. He says that. He hears some, and he says, who is there who is speaking in my courtyard? And he goes there, and he found the Lord Krishna there. Oh, it is you who have said. It is you who have spoken. And then he comes back. So that Janeshwar is not satisfied with the music or the voice of the bird. He goes found, and that the speaker was Krishna. That is what experience of Janeshwar. It is like that. We should not be satisfied with music. Music with a harlot, or a prostitute, and music with an audience. I do not find any difference in it. It is just has the two different modes of music. Music, if it does not end into mysticism, is nothing but rotten, you see. And the music, the musician also will be a part of that rottenness, because it is he who speaks. But music which is concerned with God can never be rotten. It is the melodious voice of God himself. You see, God comes into him and sings. I tell you a great example of this minister. My daughter, you must have known Vimal, Kamal, he was 5 years old. And on his way to Athene, I was with her to Nimbarnabad. Professor Anade was there at Athene somehow. And he said, will your daughter come? It was at three or four at night, 4 a.m. Yes, I said. And I woke up my daughter, and she came. And she sang, Vitthala, Gajari. He was so fond of that music, singing of that song, that as soon as she came out, she sang very beautifully. And then there were 3 or 4 persons, and Professor Nari said, you cannot understand this, even if you hear this several times. It is not she who is singing, it is her soul who is singing. And none can understand this, you see. Her soul was tuned with the infinite, and it was God in the form of her soul that was singing, and therefore Professor Anade was nodding like a serpent, you see. Yes, that is what I am saying is, it is not the musician who is singing, it must be God in it. I have heard a musician, like, you see, he is now dead and gone, but I hear his play. And once I was going along with your Professor Mahavir Prasad Vyas, just on the opposite side of the road, and I stopped suddenly. And so I said, it must be, who? Abdul Karim Khan. Abdul Karim Khan. None in the world, I say, has got the Swarajnana as Abdul Karim Khan. I stopped immediately, and he asked me, why are you stopping? Oh, it must be Abdul Karim Khan who is singing, I said. And it was Abdul Karim Khan. That is how one must capture the music and come to the musician. Otherwise, if we don't come to the musician, and the ultimate musician is God, then if the music does not turn us towards God, then all music is in vain. It is for the sake of filling the belly, or having the honor, having the respect, you see, in the public. You are gaining the praise of the audience, that is all, nothing more than that. But if that singing will lead you towards God, then of course it is great. There was a man, Dr. Paripachadar, at Nimbar, and he said, he prayed to God, I do not want to be, you see, my Philip, my Gurunan Ameriku. I want only to sing your fame in private. And he began. And he began in such a melodious voice that Professor Anandabur asked him to sing. And he sang. After 2 or 3 years, he became a good singer. No teacher, nothing at all, no musical instrument. And he was singing. He is still there at Solapur, and very beautiful singing. And I asked him, what is the secret of this? Nothing but prayer to God. I want to sing before you and not before men. You see, he is still alive. Pensions must have seen him. Dr. Paripachadar, you must have seen him, and it is he who has seen him. Why? Because he has diverted all his musical towards God. Therefore, he began singing. My sons can have knowledge of singing. I do not have it. If I begin to sing, you will all go, and I shall be alone left here. You see, therefore I do not sing. But my sons have picked up singing. How? How there? Because they have, their singing is drawn towards God. If our singing is drawn to anything else but God, our singing is in vain. It will lead to prostitution even. But there is a choice for you. I do not mean to say it is this bad or that bad, but I am just pointing out your difference, that music can lead you to the lowest pitch or can lead you to upwards, as you like, as you choose between the two. Well, the spiritual experience, I'm just telling you, it's not in vain that I've made the digression. It's useful. That spiritual experience is that which leads you to God. It is the experience of God alone. What is it? What is the content of it? Now just see, I am looking at these several things before me. If I shut my eyes, what do I have? I have nothing before me. But I can have, if I look intently at this and shut my eyes, then for a second or 2 seconds I have an image of this on the retina of the eye. What is it? It is nothing but an outer image, as students of psychology know. Is that God? No, it is not. Suppose I have seen something on a cinema curtain and I remember it. Is it God? Whatever is recalled is not God. Whatever is recalled by memory is not God. I have a picnic party. I have in imagination all the joys of the picnic. Is it akin to the divine power? No. So it is all imagination. Imagination is the hallmark of unreality. You see. Memory is nothing but that which has gone deep, deep, buried deep into the ground. And then what is it? Actual perception. Just as I see this, just as I see the wall in front of me, if I do not see God, don't say that you have seen God. If I am seeing you, and if I am not seeing God in the same fashion in which I am seeing you, don't utter the word that you have seen God. It is actual perception of God, you see. There is a fundamental difference between the perceptual seeing and the intuitive seeing. The seeing of the by the physical eyes and seeing by the celestial eyes, which comes by the grace of God, you see, not as otherwise. Grace at the beginning, grace at the middle, and grace at the end. That is the whole story of spiritual life. You cannot see God without the grace of God. How are we to achieve this? That we shall see in the second place. How are we?